This morning is Hansen v. Hansen. Good morning, counsel. We're trying to figure out what to do with all of
this. I'm sorry, Your Honor. There should be...
You can't count.
There should be four copies, one for a clerk, if you want.
We have five of them.
Ah, okay. Our copier was extra happy this morning, I guess.
Do you want to reserve any time?
Yes, Your Honor. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes. May it please the court and counsel, good morning. For the record, my name is Greg Miller. I represent the appellant, Carla Maya Hansen, in this appeal. The case has been well briefed and on the issues, and I'm going to rest on the briefing for most of them, absent questions. There are two points I'd like to focus on briefly in our short time today. First is a sequence of factual and legal events, and that's what the chart will help us with. And we believe it demonstrates that there's clear error in finding Carla in contempt, which requires vacation of the contempt. Second, why that chart, plus a couple of the record sites, why those things support remanding to a different judge. There will be a remand because this is a continuing case. It's a parenting plan case. You're all familiar with those. A third point I will not dwell on is the ultimate relief should provide that the requirement of Carla reporting to the case manager rather than to CPS or a mandatory reporter is unenforceable as a prior restraint, and all such provisions should be stricken on remand. However, the
So, counsel, with regard to that October 9, 2011 order, it was never appealed within 30 days after it was entered.
I'm sorry, which one?
The October 9, 2011 appointing the case manager. It just wasn't appealed in a timely manner, was it? That's what I'm struggling with.
The appointment of the case manager?
Saying it's got to go through the case manager. That was October 9th, 2011.
I think October 9th, 2011 was when the case manager actually retained.
All the final orders were entered in the dissolution.
Oh, that's in June of 2012.
Okay, so.
Yeah. June of 2011. The trial was in April and May of 2011.
Right.
And then the final orders were in June. Pardon?
Was any appeal taken?
No direct appeal was taken from those orders, Your Honor. And so what we're talking about...
The point then is, how can you ask us to find any part of those orders is invalid?
In terms of enforcement, we think we can. You can't enforce an invalid prior restraint. And you also can't enforce an order. Even let's assume that the order is valid. It's not been appealed, and that can't be addressed on its merits. Okay, on the substance of the prior restraint, you still have the November 4, 2011 order finding contempt, and then that has its. That's where I want to go to the chart. If you look at the chart, you have the dissolution trial ends in May of 2011. The final dissolution order is in June of 2011. And in June and September of 2011, you have the claimed CPS reports. During those times, as shown by the red bar, there's no case manager in place. So Carla cannot comply with the order.
Well, wasn't there a case manager appointed?
It was appointed, but not. She was not retained, Your Honor. She was not the retainer that paid for her and allowed her to participate was not paid by Mr. Hansen. And that was his requirement under the original appointment order in 2010. And he did not do that. So there was nobody in place. So there literally was no way for her to comply with the order. And Judge Schaefer recognized that at the November 4th hearing. She recognized that there was no one to call. that if Carla had called up, there would be nobody there to say, well, I can help you. That did get rectified, but my point is, and the point of the chart is, during the time period where there was no case manager to be called, she could not properly be held in contempt for not calling the case manager because there was no one to call. It's a catch-22, classic. After the second contempt, and the only one that appears in the record, or the latest one that is alleged in the record, there are no CPS reports. So when you get to the November hearing, and you're supposedly having a hearing on a contempt for remedial sanctions as opposed to punitive, you're actually doing punitive sanctions, as we point out in the briefing, because you're relying on these events that are earlier in time. So it's a violation of an earlier court order, and that's the definition of a criminal contempt.
But what is the punitive sanction here other than the award of attorney's fees? Isn't that permitted by the contempt statute?
She's being kept under continuing contempt. No, she's still being improperly restrained. And the attorney's fees is a fine. It's basically, it's the same thing as if she were told to pay the penalty into the court registry. That's a fine. It was, and it was characterized as a penalty at the time.
It was, who characterized it as a penalty?
I believe Judge Schaefer did. If you go back and you look at the transcript.
Good morning, Your Honors. Catherine Smith representing Mr. Hansen. I'm going to violate all of my suggestions to people and try to use this document camera. Okay. I've annotated this thing. Sorry I don't have a basis for providing copies, but I will submit this to the court at the conclusion of the argument. Let's talk about what really happened here. And August of 2010, the parties agreed to this provision that is now being called a prior restraint, an unconstitutional prior restraint, that they would go through a case manager to make any sort of CPS violations. And they did so because Ms. Hansen had already started making these unfounded allegations. In May of 2011, they went to trial, and at that time, Judge Schaefer, having heard a month's worth of testimony, said, I'm going to reaffirm that. Orally in court, she said, I'm going to reaffirm the CPS requirement. And she did so with Ms. Hansen there. And a week later, Ms. Hansen made arrangements for a school nurse to make, she made arrangements for the children to make false allegations to a mandatory reporter, which was precisely what they were trying to prevent her from doing. Now, the orders were entered in June 2011 after this May trial. That was a final dissolution decree. In between May and June 24th, there was no motion for reconsideration. There's no motion for reconsideration in the file, and there's no suggestion that this allegation that somehow this was an unconstitutional prior restraint that these parties had earlier agreed to, that there's no information to that effect, no argument to that effect. And there was no appeal taken from this. And we know from Possinger and Adler that this type of order is one that's appealable. There's an argument that's been made that the fact that there was a review hearing somehow made it unappealable. Clearly not true under our case law. No appeal. And there was a September 2011 contempt motion because by then Mr. Hansen had learned of this false allegation that had been made through a mandatory reporter. And in November 2011, Ms. Hansen was held in contempt. Now, that's that order, and by then we also knew, because there's now an allegation, well, you know, Ms. Kylan had not been retained, and so there was nobody for me to report to. But there are findings, and they're not challenged in this appeal, and they weren't challenged before because there was no appeal from that appealable contempt determination, that, in fact, Ms. Hansen had made no effort to contact Ms. Kylan. What she had done instead is had the children make this allegation to a mandatory reporter to the school nurse. So this is a red herring. There's also no evidence in this record that Ms. Kylan would have said, as a mandatory reporter, well, I'm sorry, I haven't gotten any money. I can't take your report.
Let me ask you a question. You say that there was an agreement to this provision, which is now characterized as a prior restraint.
That's correct.
Well, let's assume that we accept that there was no timely appeal of the order in June.
Yes.
Does that agreement somehow make this something less than a prior restraint?
Well,
for future purposes?
Yes. I mean, certainly any argument that this was improper was waived. But I will not concede that this is a prior restraint. This is not speech.
Can I ask you a question about that? As I understood it, there was an agreed temporary order that
correct.
Had this provision in it.
Mm-hmm.
At trial, when the parties were litigating what the provisions of the parenting plan should be, was that conceded to be a mutually agreed provision, or was that a contested provision?
We don't know because we don't have the trial transcript. And we don't have any what we do know is that there was no motion for reconsideration of the court's oral ruling because there was no motion for reconsideration before the decree was entered. And of course, there was no decree, no appeal of the decree. So this was simply not raised at that point. And this contempt determination also was not appealed. And because this is a separate contempt determination. Now, the argument is being made now, and incidentally, that decree had a provision in it for review hearings at the party's discretion every 6 months, no more than every 6 months. But there's another interesting thing about that order.
Can you have a question about that?
Yes.
Did it describe what could be reviewed?
The requirement of the case manager.
Okay.
And the case manager was in.
Provision that's characterized as a prior restraint was subject to periodic review.
Correct. And there's another thing about this order that really makes this appeal ultra moot, and that is that order by its terms, Ms. Kylan was, that order, those review hearings were only going to continue for 2 years. So by June 2013, there was no more case manager. There hasn't been a case manager. In this case.
Is that in our record?
You can look at the order itself says 2 years.
So it has a sunset provision.
Yeah. It's CP 80, wait, I've got it right here. This annotation says CP 37.
So for purposes of future activity, that requirement no longer exists.
That's
so there's
correct.
No longer any quote prior restraint close quote.
Right. And I do want to make clear that we do not concede
right,
that this was a prior restraint.
You made that quite clear.
This is shouting fire so you can get the fire trucks to come. It's an action. It's not speech. And furthermore, she wasn't prevented from making these allegations. She was directed to make them to a particular person. And this type of provision is actually quite common. That doesn't make it constitutional, but it is common in cases where there's been a history of allegations to try to prevent this type of thing because it really puts the mandatory reporters in a very difficult position when these complaints are manufactured. Well, it also puts CPS in a difficult position. So the parties agreed they were going to do this. Judge Schaefer said, I'm going to continue this for a period of 2 years. Ms. Hansen was found in contempt, including a finding that she made no effort to contact Kylan. I mean, this idea, you hadn't paid the retainer, so therefore I didn't have to do this. She just found that out after the fact. She made no effort to do this.
Your position here is that we should not resolve this constitutional issue, the characterization of this as a prior restraint.
Absolutely not. And it's not just the fact that it wasn't appealed in the decree. It's the fact that that November 2012 order was not appealed. And that was a contempt order under Wagner. It clearly was appealable. And the fact that we have been placed in the position of responding to an appeal of an order purging the contempt and having to go back and deal with not just one but two final orders substantively is the reason that we've asked for fees, not only under the contempt statute, where I think we're entitled to them as a matter of right, but under RAP 18.9. Because the way that this appeal has been prosecuted, they never intended to have anything to do with the March 2013 order. The
I
first
want to make sure I got the dates right. So it's actually
yes.
the November 2011 contempt order that, that is really the essence of this. Right?
That's correct. And we will provide, I'm sorry I only have one copy, but I will provide this to the bailiffs so that you'll have this information because the parts of this that are important, he does not, but we can have a photocopy made. And the reason he doesn't is because I didn't get this until
I'm not criticizing. I'm just making sure
right.
everybody's supposed to get a copy.
Right. And I hope we can make arrangements to do that. So this case, when it was commenced, the first designation of clerk's papers didn't even include the 2013 orders. The way in which this appeal has been prosecuted justifies an award of RAP 18.9 sanctions, and we are also entitled to fees under the contempt statute. But you simply cannot raise an issue in this way, and you certainly can't do it by attempting to get substantive review of orders that were not of two orders that were not appealed earlier. And I will reserve. I won't reserve. I'll stand down. Thank
Sit
you.
Down. Thank you.
On the long discussion about the prior restraint and why that issue should not be reached, the analysis that's been presented does not square with the holdings and the substance of either Suggs or Meredith. And so to the extent that those need to be addressed for future cases, that analysis that's being proffered is inconsistent with those cases. They're hard cases. These are hard cases.
Would you agree that this provision sunsetted and isn't going to restrain your client in the future?
I would not in this sense, Your Honor, because if this were remanded to the same trial judge, she might very well put it back in place at the request of Mr. Hansen.
You'd have to seek review of that order, wouldn't you?
We could, but that brings up the question about what order is at issue, Judge Trickey. You said it's a November order. We appealed from the 2013 order because that is the one that finally memorialized the 2012 order.
And so your argument is that it somehow relates back to the contempt order.
They are underlying orders. If you look at the notice of appeal, it's that order and then all orders that underlie that and on which they prejudicially affect. And the reason for that is because when the contempt was entered in November of 2005, there was a six-month review hearing. Well, you know very well how long it takes to process an appeal here. So if you're looking in November of 2011, should I appeal this? Or, you know, which is another fight. And well,
do you have a case that excuses the 30-day rule because it makes more economic sense to go to a six-month review hearing?
No, I'm not suggesting the 30-day rule, Your Honor, excusing that. What I'm saying is that we are appealing the subsequent order that was made in May of 2012, and it was not entered until a year later.
That was an oral
is the oral
the written order wasn't entered until the March 2013 review,
which is part of why we made the chart, because if you look at the top line of the chart, you have the events that occurred by the parties, and if you look at the bottom line, you'll see what the events are in the court.
But that order also says that the contempt has been purged,
right? It says two things, but as we said in the reply brief, you can imagine the kind of response we would have had we tried to appeal from an oral ruling in May of 2012.
What happened on November 4, 2011?
There was a hearing in front of Judge Schaefer on contempt.
Okay. Was there a written order entered on that day?
Yes, there was.
And was that an appealable order?
That was an appealable order, Your Honor.
Okay. And what justifies, if that's an appealable order and no appeal was taken, justifies us reviewing that order now?
It underlies her later orders holding is
well if we take that
Maya,
logical extreme, every decree of dissolution and every support order and every parenting plan would be subject to review when someone was held in contempt later for violating the provisions of those orders. That certainly can't be where we want to go.
No, but if you have an illegal provision in the order, then you can go there, because an illegal provision is unenforceable. It's basically void
in CR 60.
Pardon?
Doesn't CR 60 give you the opportunity to go back to the trial court and say, look, this parenting plan has an unconstitutional provision. Please modify it.
That might be one option, Your Honor.
Well, isn't that probably the correct option rather than the chart that you provided us?
Your Honor, I can only show you what was in the record and what the actions were. The point was that there was, if there had been a rapid ruling in May of 2012 with proper findings and proper conclusions, you would have had an appealable order there, which would have properly invoked the November, you know, the proper basis for that order.
Your client could have presented that order. Is that right?
They were not the, she was not the prevailing party, Your Honor.
But you don't have to be in order to present
memorializing
an oral ruling by the court. It took months to get the order entered, and there's no explanation about why it took so long. So, you know, an order could have been entered before the 29th of March, 2013.
One thing I'd like to leave you with before I run out of time. We have briefed the difference between a civil remedial contempt and a criminal contempt. This was a criminal contempt in both circumstances, in all the orders that were entered. It was punishment for past activity. That is improper, and that is one reason why, in most cases, you'll see under the case law, if there's criminal contempt, it has to be sent to a different judge. That's one of the reasons why the fact that it's a criminal contempt here requires remand, no matter what else you do.
Thank you,
Your Honor.